So what if the most painful chapter of your life became the reason you discovered your life's purpose? Today's guest didn't set out to change the world. He was simply trying to save the woman he loved. What happened after her passing sent him on a journey that has lasted decades. And it all started with one decision to keep searching for answers. Welcome back to the show. You know, every once in a while, we have a guest whose story reminds us that some of life's greatest missions are born from our greatest heartbreaks. Today's guest is a very special guest. His name is George Wiseman, and he is the founder of Eagle Research. He's an inventor, a researcher, and someone who spent nearly four decades asking questions that most people never think to ask. But before any of that, George was a husband, a caregiver, and a man who spent years trying to save the woman he loved from lupus. Her passing changed everything. George, first of all, thank you so much for being here. I know this isn't always an easy story to tell, but I really appreciate your willingness to share it because I feel like it's going to resonate with a lot of people and you're going to inspire everyone listening today. So thank you so much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here and an honor as well. I'm really impressed with Stacey's work. So, and it's good to meet you.
I would love the audience to get to know you, the man behind all of this and the mission. So before we talk about your work, who is George Wiseman? Who was George Wiseman before Eagle Research and the inventions and the brown gas? What was life like growing up?
Okay, I was born in Montana and my father always wanted to be a cowboy. So he bought a ranch, actually five ranches in British Columbia while I was quite young, like in early grade school. And we spent the summers up on these ranches he put together to make one big ranch. At the time, you could buy a quarter section, which is 160 acres for only about $2,000 in the middle of British Columbia.
Oh, wow.
So he achieved his great dream. He ended up being a cowboy and he raised us kids. There were nine of us living in a little trapper's cabin, a 25-foot square, and there was no electricity, no running water. We lived like it was in the 1800s. In fact, the trapper's cabin was built in the 1800s and that became the main ranch house. So the I'd get up at 4:30 in the morning, saddle a horse, and that was pretty much how I was growing up. The important part for here, though, is that I considered myself to be a lazy person when I was growing up because I didn't like to fix anything more than once. And it turns out that I have a very high mechanical IQ. So being an inventor was an obvious thing later in life, I realized. But I'd figure out why something broke and then fix it again in such a way that it wouldn't break again. So that's, I consider that to be laziness because I didn't like to fix anything more than once. And as I proceeded with my life, I brought that philosophy with me. First of all, I had the ability to fix things, to see things that were obvious to me, but not so obvious to others. Like when I went to school for a mechanic technician, they had a test that tests your mechanical IQ, and I was off the scale. They couldn't even measure my mechanical IQ. And I was actually able to, during the course of my work, or my schooling in that particular course, I was able to convince the teacher that six of my answers were more correct than the curriculum. So how many students can say that they actually changed the course that they were taking at the time? I just spoke with that instructor a month or so ago. He's still alive and it was a nice conversation. Anyway, back to the point. I grew up on this cattle ranch. It gave me the basis of my whole life. And when I got off the ranch and got into by the way, we didn't even have radio on the ranch. We were so far out in the boonies that we didn't even get radio reception. There was no anything like that. And when I got out in the real world where everybody else lives these days, and I had hot and cold running water and electricity and all of those things, I swore never to be without it again. And so I was the basis of my becoming an alternative energy researcher. And note that when I got off the ranch, my 1966 Ford pickup truck, which is a half-ton pickup truck, was getting 36 miles to the gallon. And I didn't know that pickup trucks weren't supposed to get 36 miles to the gallon.
Okay.
So when I started my inventing business, the first thing I was doing was fuel savers, because I knew how to increase the vehicle fuel mileage significantly. And I helped hundreds of thousands of people do that over the years. I've written 24 books, which are available on my website, that people can see my various projects and come up to date on this thinking that the average person just doesn't even know. Like when I went to mechanics college for automotive technician, there were a lot of things that weren't taught in the college that I was able to help the other students learn and understand, like the 14.7:1 air fuel ratio isn't actually true, yet everybody has taught it. So that's one reason why you can get a lot higher fuel mileage, because there's ways to make the fuel more efficient. In any case, it came to where I was learning how to get fuel mileage, better fuel mileage for fuel injected vehicles, because in the 80s, they were switching from carburetors to fuel injected. So my carburetor knowledge was becoming obsolete. And Brown's gas happened to be one of those things that could increase the efficiency of fuel injected vehicles. So I started experimenting with Brown's gas in 1986, and that led me into experimenting with the gas as for a lot of different things, as well as making large electrolyzers that could replace the fuel in acetylene torches. So anyone who was cutting steel or anything like that could replace it with Brown's gas at 2% of the cost of using acetylene. And there's lots of story behind that. But the point is, then people started experimenting, unbeknownst to me, and I wouldn't even have thought of it, but they started bubbling the Brown's gas in water and feeding it to plants. And plants started growing like 3 to 10 times faster. Like if you had plants in soil, it would be about 3 times faster. And in hydroponics, it was growing about 10 times faster. So this Brown's gas had a health application that was absolutely unknown to me, even though I was an expert in making the world's most efficient Brown's gas electrolyzers. Again, my alternative energy research, I put it into making a new design of Brown's gas electrolyzer that ended up being half the weight, half the size, and produced the same quantity of Brown's gas.
I love this. I want to go back to what you said about, I want everyone to know everything about this because it's phenomenal. But I'm really curious to know about your mindset, because we've had so many different successful people on the show over the years. And one thing that every single one of them have had in common is that deep curiosity, you know, the ability to challenge people, the confidence to say, you know what, I think there might be a better way. Is that something that you grew up with? Because I read that you, the part about growing up in British Columbia and describing yourself as the cowboy, what does being a cowboy mean to you? And was this always ingrained in you?
Well, the being a cowboy, if people have watched Yellowstone, like the movie series there with,
Everybody has.
That gives you a pretty good idea of what it means to be a cowboy. And a cowboy pretty much has to be a jack of all trades, because we lived so far out in the woods with the ranch. There were no veterinarians. There were no doctors. There were no automotive mechanics. There were no anything. So if you didn't do it yourself, it pretty much didn't get done. And cowboys help each other. Like the neighbors help neighbors. If there's something that needs done that requires more hands, we ride over and ask for help and organize things. And certain things like everybody would buy a big flock of chickens, for example, like 100 chickens. And then there would be the day that you would, a bunch of people would get together with the machines that would chop the heads off and defeather them and all that kind of stuff. And just move this apparatus around from ranch to ranch so that everybody's chickens would get taken care of. So these are the kind of things that happened. I learned honor. I learned integrity. I learned how to help your neighbor and how to care for all living things that were under our care, like all the animals and stuff. Interesting thing, we didn't eat beef because you could sell beef. That was our cash crop, if you will, in the end.
Okay.
So I grew up on wild meat. So we had guns in the vehicle. There's lots of people don't like guns anymore, but back then it was a tool that was necessary. There were bears and
survival.
Cougars and wolves and coyotes and various survival of ourselves, but also survival of our animals, like to keep the calves from getting eaten by a wolf, for example. You'd need to be able to protect them. But then for food, we shot deer and grouse and elk and various things for food. It wasn't for trophies or anything. That's how I grew up. I grew up that it was very down to earth existence. But you learn, you have to trust your neighbors, and your neighbors have to be able to trust you. So making deals on a handshake, for example, that was, you didn't break that kind of a deal. You even if you suffered for it, you kept your word. So it was important. And that's the kind of integrity that I have brought forward as well. when I say I'll do something, I will do it. If I'm going to be someplace, I will be there. It just,
that is what stands apart. That's what leaders, like good leaders, that sets good leaders apart from the ones that, you know, don't say what they do and do what they say. It's such an important quality to have, for sure. I love that story, and I'm picturing it. It sounds like a movie, and I'm picturing Yellowstone right now, and building that community. It makes it, the story, more meaningful as well. And I would love for you to tell us about your wife. Who was she? Where did you meet her? And what made you fall in love with her?
Well, I originally was married to a woman in when I went to agriculture college. I met this woman who we resonated with very much. And eventually, 13 years later, we did get divorced because I wasn't meeting her emotional needs. I didn't realize at the time, it's happened decades since, that I have Asperger's syndrome, a high level autism. So relationships are very difficult for me. And I learned a lot during that first relationship, which actually qualified me for my second one. And then after I was divorced, I started dating again. And I met this woman online. This woman, her name was Tanaj, and she was in Ontario, where I happen to be living now. And and we got along really well, because with my kind of autism, I could communicate very well remotely, like with emails and such. And we met on Match.com back when it was just getting started in the late 90s. Yes. And by that time, I already had my business set up. So she decided she would leave her business. And she was the director of a Montessori school. This is important because she understood how to manage with children and such. And in certain ways, my relationship skills were very childish. So she was, and it wasn't until later that we realized that I had Asperger's, but she was able to give me tools and modifications to make it better, the relationship better. So anyway, we essentially fell in love on Match.com. And interestingly enough, our love emails crossed in the mail. Okay, we sent it on the same day. I said, I love you. At the same day, she said, I love you. And they actually crossed.
Wow.
So we both said it first because we hadn't seen the other person. It was quite the experience. And she was amazing. She was a multimedia artist and would just look at the world fresh. And she did things and organized things that I would never have done to have fun in my life. I'm a workaholic. So when she'd made sure we had fun doing various things. And then, and we got married just before the turn of the millennium in 1999. And then she helped me with my business. And by that time, we were mostly selling fuel savers and such. But this health aspect started to pop up with the Brown's gas. And as I was explaining before, back in 1996, for example, a fellow had put Brown's gas bubbled water on a cotton ball in a plastic cap and taped it to a melanoma on his forehead. And in 3 weeks' time, that melanoma was gone. But
wow.
I didn't believe him, okay? And this is actually important because all this time, as health people were showing me these things about plants and various things that they were doing for health, it took until 2005 before they convinced me to drink the Brown's gas bubbled water myself. And since then, I haven't been sick. I haven't been sick since 2005. So by 2007, I endorsed the Brown's gas bubbled water for health and sent that out to my various people. Now, my late wife wouldn't drink the Brown's gas bubbled water because her sister-in-law advised her not to drink any water greater than a pH of 8. And when you bubble the Brown's gas in the water, it does raise the pH slightly. So
was that after, because she was diagnosed with lupus, correct? And
the Brown's gas, how the Brown's gas affects lupus, it was much later in the story.
Okay.
I didn't know at the time, and she didn't know at the time, how healthful the Brown's gas was. So in 2007, I advised thousands of people out there that had ER50 machines, which was an early version of Brown's gas machine that I was selling. So they could have a tabletop version instead of spending thousands of dollars on a water torch.
That the whole system, right.
Building at the time. Yeah. So I sent out and told people how they could bubble the water and drink it. And then the testimonials started to come in and people started asking, could we inhale the gas? And as you see, I am inhaling it now. But at the time, now this is where the expert syndrome would come in and I had blinders on. I was used to Brown's gas being a combustible gas, and I knew how explosive this gas was. When I worked in the mines, I got my blasting certifications, so I literally blew apart mountains for a living. Yet the loudest explosion that I ever heard was in my own shop when I deliberately set off a 70 PSI explosion in a metal container. And people came running from blocks around to see what the explosion was, because the air pressure difference had caused the garage doors to act like great big speakers, and it had just gone boom over the entire neighborhood. So I didn't want people inhaling a potentially explosive mixture. I thought that would be a bad thing in case it did explode. Well,
definitely a liability waiting to happen for sure.
So in December of 2015, one of my customers sent me a video of a Taiwanese hydrogen bar where they were inhaling Brown's gas just like I am right now. And I realized how stupid I had been, because I'm an internal and external combustion expert with explosives and all of these kind of things. But I had forgotten that if you have hydrogen in air under 4.7% hydrogen in air, it's non-combustible. It's under the lower combustibility limit. So it's perfectly safe if you're inhaling a hydrogen mixture that's under 4.7%. So, but at that point, I had already been years where my late wife, her organs were failing. And by that time, I was her 24/7 caretaker.
You became her caregiver in amongst all of this. And so I don't think people really understand what caregiving looks like until they lived it. Tell us more about those years.
So it was gradual, but there was a time where it came where she couldn't get to the toilet on her own. So I'd have to carry her to the toilet. And eventually it got to where she couldn't even roll over in bed without assistance as her organs were failing and such. She'd lost her eyesight, and she had beautiful hair, and she'd lost a lot of her hair. So loss of an eyesight was actually a blessing in that she couldn't see how her hair was gone, which she loved her hair so much. So I couldn't be away from her for more than 20 minutes at a time. She never had to wear a diaper. I was always able to be there when she needed to go to the bathroom. So I did all the cooking. I did the cleaning. I did the going to get the grocery shopping. But because of this caretaking, I couldn't work. So there were years when I couldn't work. I couldn't make money. And so we ended up being about $300,000 in debt by the time that she died in March of 2016. So it wasn't only the emotional and physical stress. There was a financial stress as well when you're the caretaker. And it isn't just the person who is sick that is suffering. The caretaking team, whatever is around, suffers as well, because it takes up more and more of their attention and time and resources and such.
I imagine you feel exhausted and overwhelmed and a touch bit helpless, right? And I mean, I'm curious as to what kept driving you, because you spent years searching for answers and invested everything you had. You just said that, you know, you were struggling financially as well. If you look back at that now, what was driving you?
That's a really good question. And I would have to say my work ethic. I couldn't not care for this woman. I loved her. And she, even one time she said, because she loved me, she said, leave me to die, because she could see how much I was suffering. That's the kind of woman she was. She didn't want to see the people around her suffering. And of course I couldn't do that. And so I continued to do things like modify the bed so she was sitting up and could breathe easier. And I couldn't sleep for more than a few minutes at a time, like 30 minutes or so, because I had to check on her and make sure that she was okay. It was very difficult, but I'd say that my growing up on the ranch, there were no coffee breaks. There were no lunch breaks or anything like that. There was work to be done, and you worked from sun up to can't see, and you just did what needed to be done. And I've done that all my life. So it didn't feel like that much of a hardship. I was under stress, of course, but it was just what needed to be done. So I just did what needed to be done each day, each minute, each time. But there were things that I couldn't do, like work. And she was totally into natural health. So she thought hospitals were some place you went to die. And so she did all the health ways that we could think of. And in all of this kind of thing, she wouldn't drink the Brown's gas water, and I didn't know to inhale. So we spent thousands of dollars on various things and treatments and stuff for her, but nothing was working. So it turned out that in early March of 2016, she couldn't breathe anymore. And the ambulance came and took her to the hospital because she couldn't catch her breath. She couldn't get her oxygen levels up. And they put her on oxygen and they did the diagnostic at that time. And that's when we discovered that she had lupus, a very severe form of lupus, which is an autoimmune disease. So that's why her organs were failing. And even though we had essentially cured her diabetes, she had a type 2 diabetes happen because her pancreas was failing. We actually changed her diet and stuff and got her blood sugar levels down without metformin or insulin injections and things. So there were various things that we were doing, but everything just kept failing. In the end, it'd be one organ and then another one and then another one kind of thing. So in this case, it was her kidneys that were bad. And it built up a lot of edema in her body. So she became very heavy and then couldn't breathe because of the water around her heart was preventing her heart from functioning very well. And that's essentially what she died of then, was the heart failure due to the edema from the nephrotic kidneys. So the at that point when she died, I was devastated in a way that I had no idea it was possible to be. I came home from the hospital and it took me 5 tries to even get into the apartment we were living in at the time. I would walk in the door and I would see her things and it would just crush me. And I'd have to turn around and go out and I'd walk for a few miles and then I'd come back and do it again. The thing was, we had cats. We had 5 cats at the time and they needed to be fed. So eventually I got into the apartment and I never slept in our marriage bed again. I just slept on the couch. And interesting story about the cats was the one cat was her favorite. His name was Talon. And she always told him when she left, "I'll be back." And this time I came into the apartment and he came up to me and I said, "Talon, she's not coming back." And he wailed. He just stumbled away wailing. It was crazy. But it's important to say that, because later, when I was sitting on the couch, just staring out into air, because my life was gone, all my hopes and dreams and everything about living life joyfully was just gone. I was grieving, and I was just staring out into space, and suddenly all 5 cats came and huddled around me, close to me. Yes. And they had never done that before. They were always, if one cat came, they'd fight over who was going to sit in your lap or stuff like that. But all 5 of them, including Talon. So I'm quite certain that my late wife came and spoke with them in the spirit and told them that I needed this help. So they did that. So within a couple of days, I look over my shoulder at this Brown's gas machine that I was using to bubble gas into water. And I thought, you know what? I remember this video, this Taiwanese video that was sent to me about inhalation. And at this point, I didn't care if I lived or died. I wasn't suicidal. You have to understand. There were times when my chest would hurt really badly and I'd realize I hadn't even taken a breath. My body was just shutting down from the grief. So I'd have to remember to breathe. And I looked at this machine and I thought, you know, I'm just going to set it up so that I can inhale safely, making sure that the hydrogen I'm inhaling is less than 2% of my inhaled breath. And whatever happens. So I set up a video camera for when I first inhaled, and that video is still on my YouTube channel and people can see what I looked like then and what I look like now. Okay. 10 years later, I look like I did 20 years ago. So I'm younger looking now than I did even when I did the video 10 years ago. So in any case,
that's incredible.
I wanted to, as an inventor, I record things. So I wanted to record if something happened, people would know my stupidity, but it turned out to be one of the best things.
I feel like the tragedy made you fearless. Like it stripped away the part of you that was holding on to this, a blockage or a fear. And then after, you know, you had the situation with the cats come in and I feel like, if I may, it may have instilled some belief in you that, you know, she's still here. I need to continue on. Let's make this work. And that part of you kind of lit up again. It was like an old part of you left and then something new just came in and took over and said, "We're doing this. No more fear." Yeah. Is that what it felt like to you?
Well, I certainly didn't have any more fear. I was, because I didn't care about anything at the time. I didn't come back alive until later. And that's part of the story as well. So what happened also Another time, just because we're talking about her spirit, I was trying on her computer because she paid all the bills on her computer. And so I was trying to use her computer to find the information I needed to pay the bills. And I was being very frustrated because I couldn't find it. And so okay. I was, tears were streaming down my face as I was so frustrated and grieving. And suddenly I wasn't even touching the keyboard at the time. I swear to God, the program I needed popped up on the screen in front of me spontaneously. Wow. And everything I needed was right there. It was.
So she was looking after you.
So I'm quite certain, and still is to an extent. So in any case, I started inhaling the Brown's gas, and the first time I inhaled about 15 minutes at night, I didn't sleep all that night. I was awake and alert.
Is this when you set everything up and you're like, okay, I'm going to try this, I'm going to make it safe, and I'm going to record it? Is this the YouTube video that you recorded of the first time you inhaled it?
That's right. That's exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, perfect.
So that night, I didn't sleep. I was wide awake and alert. It wasn't like a coffee buzz or anything. It just, and I'm used to falling asleep against a rock, you know. It's like, so that was very disconcerting. And I started inhaling then in the mornings so that it would all be cleared out by the time I would go to sleep. And then eventually when my body got used to the hydrogen, I was able to inhale anytime and it doesn't bother my sleep at all. It's fine. But obviously I needed it. But one of the first things that happened when I started to inhale was that my psoriasis started to peel off. I had white skin on my elbows, knees, and feet that I thought was just scar tissue. What do you call it? With the when your skin builds calluses. So I just thought it was just thick skin from working and stuff, but it wasn't. And when it peeled off, it was like a snake shedding its skin. And I thought, and that was very disconcerting. But underneath was baby smooth skin, so I thought that was all right. And then another thing that happened.
So how long after you started inhaling it did that start happening?
That was within a couple of weeks. That was relatively quickly. And then
and so
within
after
about
that
three
time when you were alert all night, you're like, okay, I've got something here.
Yeah. Well, I was still working on that. But what really convinced me was that my libido came back. Okay.
Okay.
Within 3 weeks, I suddenly had, as a 50-something year old man, I had the libido of a 17-year-old. Okay.
Wow.
It was pretty phenomenal. And I can tell you that if you have a strong libido, you care if you live or die. So that literally saved my life. I understand very intimately how spouses follow each other into the grave, because it would have happened to me, no question. And I've seen it happen to a dozen men since. But the inhaling of the Brown's gas brought back my libido, which made me care that I was living and enjoy my body again. And I started dating women, and some of my friends, especially ones that were friends of my late wife, were very upset with me because they thought I didn't care about this woman that had been the love of my life because I was now dating women again. But I couldn't not. I wanted to have sex. So you need a partner to do that, at least enjoyably. So I did start dating, and over a period of a few months, I eventually met the woman I'm now married to, and I got remarried. But in the process, getting back to what happened, after a month of inhaling and having nothing but good things happen, I went back to my customers and I told them, like these thousands of customers, and told them how they could modify their ER50 machine so that they could safely inhale like I was doing. And then the testimonials really started to come in. Like, I have a long list of things that happened to me, which we can get into in a minute, but this is important. About 3 months after I told people that they could inhale, a woman got back to me who had lupus symptoms and told me that her lupus symptoms were gone in 3 weeks' time after she stopped, or after she started inhaling at the Brown's
gas. Wow.
And
how did that hit you? I mean, that must have been challenging for you because your late wife had just passed away.
I don't of a severe form of lupus. That's right. And she had never inhaled the gas. And of course, this hit me like a ton. I literally fell to the floor. I was literally crying on the carpet, just sobbing. And I couldn't stop because I realized in that instant that I read that email that I had Brown's gas in my shop since 1986. I'd been told that it had health applications since 1996. I was told by hundreds of people by 2006 that it was good. We were trying since 2006 everything that we could think of to try to help my late wife get better. And here it was in 2016. This woman said, Brown's gas, 3 weeks' time. All the pain and suffering, the financial, the physical, the emotional suffering that we went through would totally not have happened. She would still be alive. I'd still be having her in my life. And she'd be making a difference in the world because the things that she was doing were world-changing. A whole other story. But I realized at that instant, as I sobbed myself out on the floor, that that was what I call my Jonah moment. That was the moment that the whale spit me up on the beach. That was the moment where I said, God, I understand.
Yeah.
I need to dedicate my life to serving your will, which is to help as many people as possible not go through that pain and suffering and financial devastation that we went through. So that's when it changed everything. That's the point. All of my life up to that point had made it so that it changed everything. And then 10 years since, there were times, most of the time I was working from 3 o'clock in the morning till 8 p.m. at night, sleeping maybe 5 hours in a day, getting all this together so that I could help people. And I helped many, many thousands, many tens of thousands of people so far get better. And I love these testimonials. We can go over some of the other testimonials later, but the point is.
Well, I want you to tell us how your health started changing. And I wanted to just say that I literally got chills as you're speaking. I could just feel the passion and the truth of this. You know, I talk to so many people, but I can hear the authenticity and the integrity and the truth of all of this and how this transformed. Like it's literally running through my mind like a movie right now. And so I'm really curious to know, what did you begin noticing in the changes in your health through the months that followed that moment when you decided to finally start inhaling it?
Yes, I actually made a list. I'm looking up at a list I have above here to see. So first of all, the psoriasis on my elbows, knees, and feet disappeared in about 3 weeks' time. The arthritis in my hands, like I had very painful and weak hands, disappeared in about 3 months. I had very severe tinnitus where... And all of this, by the way, was still happening while I was drinking the Brown's Gas bubbled water. And so only after I started inhaling did all of these things disappear. So now I hear a slight hiss when I get really stressed. So that took about 8 months. My neuropathies disappeared, like I'd lost the feeling in the palm of my left hand. And from my knees to my feet on the shins of both legs, you could stick pins in it. There was no feeling left at all. So those neuropathies resolved and I got the full feeling back in all of my skin. That was about 6 months. My hair was totally gray or white. You can't really see it with the video here. It washes out a lot. But when I took the video back in the day, my hair was down to here and it was totally white. My mustache, it was totally white. So I got some color back in my hair and some of the hairs started to grow back on my head. So I have hairs up to here now where I had been mostly bald and I'm still mostly bald. And I don't mind the look. It's easy to maintain, just shave it off and it's good.
Oh, you look
my
great.
Heart murmur disappeared. And that took about 8 months. But what happened was the wife I'm married to now, the woman I'm married to now, sent me into the doctor because I very seldom ever went into doctors in all of my life. But I knew I had a heart murmur from when I was a child. And that's a weak, fluttery heart valve. And my grandfather died of complications of his heart murmur. So it was a genetically predisposed to having that particular fault in my heart. But it was gone. The heart murmur was gone. My heart healed. And I had hand warts that I had had from when I was a kid. And they're a virus. But my immune system hadn't been strong enough to get rid of them, and they disappeared. That took about 6 months. My eyesight improved. I've now passed 2 driver's tests without my glasses, which I'd worn since I was about 9 years old. I wore glasses. So my eyes improved. All the scars disappeared off my body. So I don't know if it can be. It's hard to see. I had a scar here on my forehead, which was, I don't know if you can see it anymore. My skin still bends when I wrinkle my forehead. It still bends around that area where the scar was, but now it's skin, which means that my regeneration systems and stem cells came back online because it took that scar tissue where my body had just patched a wound and instead of healing it properly, and it got rid of the scar and regenerated the skin. And interestingly enough, all the scars disappeared from my body in reverse order to when I got them. I found that to be very interesting. So the ones that I got when I was a baby, practically, were the last to go. It was just as a matter of interest. So the, and my libido, I already told, within 4 weeks, I had got my libido back. My muscles hardened. One of the things you do when you're inhaling is you get an exercise-like reaction out of your body, and your muscles get strong. And then, and of course, my biological age reversed. There's a whole bunch of reasons why that happened, so that I actually look younger now than I did, like I said, 20 years ago. And just comparing pictures from then to now kind of thing, so people could see.
Wow. And that is incredible.
And then 4 years after I started inhaling, I actually noticed that my balance came back. I was standing in the shower washing my feet, my toes, and I realized I wasn't leaning against the shower wall anymore. I can't even remember when I had not leaned against the shower wall, so my balance came back. So nerves regeneration, brain regeneration, skin, all my organs were repairing themselves and regenerating. So
that's absolutely incredible. And I think it's important that we ask this question because the audience is probably thinking that it sounds incredible, but it also sounds pretty hard to believe. How do you typically respond to healthy skepticism from people? And what do you encourage people to look for themselves before they make up their own minds?
That's healthy skepticism. I address it a couple ways. First of all, when I was going through all that pain and suffering financially and everything, when we'd buy a machine for $4,000 or $5,000 to put electrons in your body or whatever it is that we were doing at the time, that was a done sale. You couldn't get it back. You couldn't return it and get your money back kind of thing. What I'm doing to help the skepticism is just the opposite. I give a 1-year satisfaction guarantee on our machines. So people say, can it help? And fill in the blank, cancer, Parkinson's, ALS, lupus, any of the autoimmune diseases. And that's just the serious things. We're not even talking about the less serious things that are happening, like people just not having enough energy to deal with their day. There's actually doctors prescribing Brown's gas for depression because it's almost impossible to feel depressed when you're inhaling the Brown's gas. So that's what I say to the skeptics is try it. You're skeptical. It's not going to cost you anything except shipping and to try the machine. And so that's how we address the skepticism part, is that, first of all, I know that it isn't for everyone and everyone has a choice and they can choose to go with the traditional doctors, which we did a lot of that stuff and it didn't do anything. Or you can try this. And the nice thing about this is it helps. It's very synergistic with other modalities as well. Like people are doing hyperbaric oxygen and infrared therapies and stuff. The Brown's gas works very well because it's literally nutrition. And because 62% of our body is hydrogen by volume and 24% oxygen and 12% carbon and 2% everything else. So our most important macronutrient is hydrogen. And so when you get enough hydrogen, then your body can heal itself from all the various things that happen when you don't have enough hydrogen. Like if you don't have enough hydrogen, your body really knows how to stay alive. Your body will start shutting down extraneous systems that are not immediately life-threatening. So your regeneration system goes first with the stem cells and all that kind of stuff. So you age faster. If you still don't have enough hydrogen, your immune systems will start to shut down because they're not immediately life-threatening, but you're going to get sick easier and not get well as quickly. And then if you still don't have enough hydrogen, your organs will start to fail and then you'll die. So when I got enough hydrogen, my organs healed, my immune systems came back online, my regeneration system came back online. And these are all things that I've personally experienced and my customers have been reporting with their testimonials. So if you're skeptic, that's another thing, is to look at the testimonials, which unfortunately I don't have. I have hundreds of testimonials, but I only have a few up online. But they are there. Again, it's a matter of time. I'm busy and we're selling as many machines as we can manufacture in this particular facility. So we're increasing manufacturing capability by steps. And every time I increase my manufacturing ability, God sends a bunch more people to buy the machines. So I haven't had time to follow up. I'm actually hiring more people so that we can get those websites developed and get more of the testimonials up online so that people can look for a particular ailment. Like if they have ALS, for example, or COPD or something, they can look and see what happened with other people. And that will help the skepticism as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So is this for anybody? Like you mentioned the people who struggle with energy, the people who have anxiety and depression. Who is this made for? And is it for everyone, essentially.
It's actually for every living being, because you could treat animals and plants and any water-based life form all requires this hydrogen for health. But the Brown's gas machine that we have, the AquaCure, is specifically designed so you can adjust the gas production for anything from an infant to a 500-pound person. So you can get the optimal 2% hydrogen. And I will say quickly that there are a lot of me toos and knockoffs out there that promote more is better. And that's not true. More is dangerous because if you go over that 4.7% hydrogen in your intake breath, it's potentially explosive and somebody's going to get hurt if there's an explosion and that happens. So you can dial this machine down to the optimal level for any size person or animal. And and they have proven scientifically since, because now there's been thousands of scientific studies on hydrogen for health, they've proven that 2% in the inhaled breath is the optimal level. If you go more than 2%, like 3%, 4%, you get no more benefit. It doesn't hurt you. There's no negative side effects to the hydrogen inhalation. But and that's one of the nice things about it as well. You can't get too much. But longer is better. So those people who have cancer, for example, they need about 8 hours of inhalation a day. And somebody that's really healthy and just wants to maintain their health, maybe an hour. But it's nutrition. Think of it when you're eating your food. You eat for about an hour a day. So you're inhaling for about an hour a day to get that same nutrition, that kind of thing that's going on.
Do you use it like for the average person? How do you use it? When do you use it? And do you use it at different times? Or can you put it on in the morning, say, when you're getting ready and inhale it and then go about your day?
Everybody is different. So that everybody has to listen to their own body. Those people that have serious ailments and need many hours, they sleep with it generally because then your day is yours to do with what you will. Some people break it up and do segments several times during the day, a few minutes, like 10 or 15 minutes, three or four times a day. There's people that do mostly in the morning because that's when they have time to sit down while they read the newspaper or watch the news or whatever they're doing and eating their breakfast. So everybody's different. And the main thing is to get the nutrition into your body. It's like I asked a trainer one time, what exercise would be best for me? And the trainer's response, I always will remember this, was whatever you will do.
Okay.
So that's kind of the way it is. It just find out when it's best for you to get it into you.
Amazing. One question I want to ask you is that, I mean, over the years, I'm sure you had people that were not understanding what you were doing or perhaps challenging you on it. And after interviewing many entrepreneurs, every one of them reaches a point where they're like, I have to decide whether I'm going to follow my purpose or start listening to everyone else's opinions. How did you block out that noise?
Okay, this is where my high-level autism comes in really well. When I focus on a project, the rest of the world goes away. I literally have to set, even today, I set three alarms on my phone so that I would know when an alarm would go off and I'd look at the phone. It's better than tying a string on your finger because the string doesn't tell you what it's for. But I can set my alarms on my phone. When I get up in the morning, I look at my calendar, I set my alarms so that they'll go off, just as an example of what I do to come back to the world. So for me, it actually, a side benefit of the autism was being able to block everything else out and focus on what's real. That's one of the things I learned, because on the ranch, we didn't have experts telling us what to think or how to think.
We
had to know with what was real, what was actually the facts of life. And so that's what I got that ability, and I concentrated on that so that I could say the 4.7 to 1 air fuel ratio that's taught to all mechanics is incorrect. That is, because I know what's real. And it can be as much as 200 to 1 that the engine is actually running on. Just because you put a bunch of fuel into the engine doesn't necessarily mean that it's actually running on that fuel. Most of it's wasted. So if you could just redo the fuel system so you're not wasting that fuel, you go much further on a gallon of gas. It's pretty simple.
Right.
But I deal with reality. So, and I've done it so much that, like in the 70s, I got severe suppression on my fuel saving technology, where various things happening. My phones were tapped. My packages would get lost in the mail. Inexplicable things that were going on. And I had state attorney, my business was investigated 7 times by various government agencies in the United States and Canada. And there was not one complaint not one customer that they could find that would complain against me so they could charge me with something. So I dealt with what was real, and I helped my customers get results. And if they're not getting results, then they send the stuff back and I give them a refund. I'm just, that's the integrity part. I don't profit from anybody unless they get a benefit from my technology.
George, I love this interview. It was so amazing just sitting and chatting with you. It feels like we're having a coffee. If your late wife could see everything that you've built today, what do you think she would say to you?
That's a good question. I think that she supported me in every possible way that it was. And I think that she would appreciate what I've done, what I've continued to do, and how I have honored her sacrifice. Because quite frankly, if I had realized what was going on earlier and we had gotten Brown's Gas into her, she'd still be alive and helping. But I think that she is helping even in wherever she is right now.
And George, when people hear the name George Wiseman years from now, what do you hope they remember?
I hope they remember that I helped them.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I know you're helping so many people, and this is only the start of it, essentially. I would love for you to tell people more about where they can find you, where they can look up your products.
On my eagle-research.com website, I have all of my innovations and books and stuff, and people can see that. So eagle like the bird, then a dash mark, and then research.com. And they can just, it's like an encyclopedia. You can lose yourself in the hundreds of pages there. But if you look for the AquaCure or Brown's Gas, you can start researching there, and there'll be links where you can go on out. I would not depend on Google or a ChatGPT or almost any of those AIs to research Brown's Gas and get the truthful answer, because you're going to get the woke answers out there. They really don't know what Brown's Gas really is. So if once you understand what Brown's Gas is, you can do a better job, which of course, as an inventor, that's what I have to do, is I have to understand why something really works before you can make something better. And So that's inventing about 90% of the time, 99% of the time, you're wrong. You come up with a theory or hypothesis, and you test it, and you find out what really works. And then that 1% of time when you find something that works better than anything else, that's where your whole business gets built off from. And that's what's happened. So we're good.
Thank you so much for digging deep and sharing about your heart. I think getting to know the person behind their invention is so important, especially these days. People want to know what someone is like before they connect with their products. And I think people are going to connect so much with you and this conversation, because it's so much more than science in this conversation. There's so much about love and grief and hope and finding purpose and passion. And I can hear that in your voice. So thanks so much. And I also want to thank the audience for tuning in and for listening. If today's conversation inspired you, make sure you follow us at The Advisor, because this is just the beginning of George Wiseman's story. He's going to be joining us for a series. We're going to be going deeper on who he is and the Brown Gas. So in our next episode, we're going to be shifting gears. We're going to be diving into the science. We're going to be exploring why George believes that hydrogen deserves far more attention in the world of health and wellness, and why he's devoted so many years to researching it. So if you'd like to learn more about his work, please visit eagle-research.com. So that's eagle with a dash research.com, where you can learn more about George's work, his books, all these amazing products. And if this episode touched your heart, please share it with someone you care about. You never know whose life may change simply because they've heard a story of someone who refused to give up. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. Take care. Bye for now.